I want to begin this morning by teaching you a magic trick. It's easy, anyone can do it, and it involves numbers. This is how you do it. Instead of saying you're going to tell someone something, use a number. So, for example, you will notice at the checkout line, it's never secrets to beauty. It's always three secrets to beauty. Put a number in front of it, and all of a sudden, it's more interesting. If I say to you, for example, don't believe rumors, you'll say, yeah, don't believe rumors. But if I say, here are three rumors you shouldn't believe, and by the way, none of them are true. They're absurdly, ridiculously untrue. But it's the number that performs the magic. And so this morning, when I was going to talk about secrets of Jewish survival, I didn't just title the sermon Secrets of Jewish Survival. It's three secrets. And if you say to me, well, could there be five secrets or 10 secrets? The answer is there couldn't be 10 because that would make the sermon too long. And five is not nearly as fetching a number. So this morning there are three. In fact, Umberto Eco, who wrote the book The Name of the Rose and is an Italian scholar and academic, wrote a whole book about how people love lists. You don't want to see the most beautiful houses in LA. You want to see the 10 most beautiful houses in LA. So this, by the way, for this Shabbat morning is one of the top five sermons in the country about the three secrets of the Jewish people. And all of them are based on the first two words of this morning's parasha, Ekev Tishmerud, which we translate as if you observe, but it really means if you listen. Right? It's the same word as Shema, which is a word that weaves itself through the whole book of Deuteronomy. And so this morning I want to talk about listening because I want to talk about stories. It is one of the deepest impulses of human beings. The first thing the child says to you, Daddy, tell me a story. And that desire to hear a story is not only in children. We want to hear stories too. All sorts of stories. Every television show you watch, every movie you watch, much of the music you listen to, a lot of the gossip you hear, they're all stories. We need stories. And the Jewish people came into the world telling a story. It's so interesting to think about the fact that the beginning of the Torah is not about laws. It's a story of creation, of Adam and Eve, of the Tower of Babel, of Abraham, of Sarah, of Rebekah, of Rachel, of Leah, of Jacob, of Joseph. They're all stories. And although we're supposed to extract lessons from the stories, it's the story that grabs our heart. Long after we've forgotten what the story's supposed to be about, we remember the story itself. And the moral of it, even though that may be what the rabbi cares about, is not nearly as gripping, as powerful, as the story. And the Jewish people have a powerful story. It's a story of suffering, to be sure, but it's not primarily a story of suffering. It's a story of liberation, of faith, of creativity, of spreading out into every land and language of the world, of maintaining ourselves despite the fact that there was every chance that we would disappear like a puff of smoke in the winds of history. It's our story. And like most people, we love our own stories. We treasure it. We hold it close. We read it over and over and over again. And one of the reasons that we read it over again is that it is an inexhaustible story. Doesn't matter how many times you hear the story of Jacob, you can always find something new in it. And so the first secret of the Jewish people is that we love our story. And therefore, it starts to wear deep grooves into our character from listening to it day after day and year after year. And the characters in our story don't just become abstract characters, they're part of our lives. Which is the second secret. The second secret is that not only do we love to hear the story, but we love to tell the story. That's what we do. Our children need to hear our stories. And from the time children are young, we tell them the Jewish story as well as the story of our own lives, which we realize when we get old enough are also part of the Jewish story. Because every generation adds its piece. And as we tell it, we realize something remarkable, which is the Jewish story is actually not only a Jewish story. It's a story for the world. Has it ever struck you that at key moments in the Bible, it's non-Jews and not Jews who save the day? After all, Adam and Eve aren't Jewish and they started the world. Pharaoh's daughter isn't Jewish and she saves Moses. Moses' father-in-law Yitro isn't Jewish and he's the one who spares him in the desert from dying of overwork. Job, who is the perfect character in the Tanakh, isn't Jewish. Three times Baruch Hashem is said in the Torah, and all three times it's by someone who isn't Jewish. The Parsha that has the Ten Commandments in it is named after Yitro, not Jewish. And the Torah is trying to tell us something, which is that your story has a message for the world, not only for the Jewish people. That's why, although the new year in Christianity begins with the birth of Jesus and the new year in Islam begins with the travels of Muhammad, and the new year in the Greek calendar begins with the first Olympics, the new year in the Jewish calendar begins with the creation of the world. The new year isn't Abraham's journey. It's the creation of the world because we believe our story is a universal story. It's for everyone. And by the way, the reverse is also true. As we have claimed for centuries, when someone hates the Jewish people, sooner or later, the world will suffer, not only the Jewish people. It was true of communism. It was true of Nazism. This past week, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post. If you look next week, I'll put it on my Facebook. And if you can't find it on my Facebook, then why aren't you on my Facebook? It's part of my story, God's sakes. But the article was, and tell me if you've asked yourself this question. All of a sudden, Mel Gibson abuses his wife, and he's dropped by his lawyer, by his agent, by his studio. Why didn't that happen when he expressed over and over again how much he hated the Jewish people? Why wasn't it enough that he said in The New Yorker that the Jews control Hollywood, or that he yelled at the trooper on the highway that the Jews were persecuting him, or, why wasn't that enough? Because the world is insufficiently aware that someone who hates the Jewish people have hate at their core. And sooner or later, it won't only be turned against us. It is a universal story. And the 20th century was a chronicle of people who didn't believe that those who hate Jews will eventually take it out on the rest of the world. That's just punctuation. So first is the idea that our story is treasured by us, and second is the idea that the world needs to hear our story. So powerful is it, in fact, that our story forms the kernel, after all, of traditions that grew from us, because it is universal. And here's the third secret of Jewish survival, in some ways, the principal secret, which is that we never made the mistake of believing that the story was over. We never thought it was over. We knew that redemption had not come. We knew that there was no Messiah in the world because we look around the world and we see that the story isn't over. Do you know what the blessing is for Israel that was created after the foundation of the state? It was called Reshit Smichat Geulatenu, which means the beginning of the flowering of our redemption. In other words, we may have a state of Israel, but it isn't over. And, as you know, the subsequent history since 1948 has proved that all too powerfully. It isn't over. The story continues, day after day, year after year. Each year, we open the door for Elijah at the Pesach Seder, but Elijah doesn't come in because the story's not over yet. We love hearing our story and telling it, and we know that there is more to tell. Maurice Samuel, the Jewish scholar, teacher, and storyteller who introduced Yiddish writers to America, he said that he thought he knew why the Jewish people have survived. Because, he said, we decided we weren't going to leave this world until we figured it out. And since we still haven't figured it out, we're still here. In other words, the story's not over yet. Because you can't understand any story until you know how it ends. It is, to borrow the title of the movie, the never-ending story. We are like the character Scheherazade from the Arabian Nights. Remember, the Sultan would put everyone to death, and he brings Scheherazade to his bed, and each night she tells him a story that's so thrilling that he can't possibly get rid of her because he needs to hear what happens tomorrow night. And she's kept alive by telling the story. The story of Abraham's wanderings, of Sarah's miraculous birth of Isaac, of the fights of the brothers, of descending to Egypt, of ascending from Egypt, of seeking the land, of Moses in the wilderness, of Job and Ruth and Deborah, and then of Rabbi Akiva and Hillel, and Maimonides and Rashi, and the Zionists and the Hasidim. This is our story, filled with personalities, with romance, with love, with tragedy, with persecution, with determination, with learning, with all the stuff of life. The author Philip Pullman said, "Thou shalt not," in other words, the commandment, appeals to the head, but once upon a time, touches the heart. Judaism is filled with mitzvot. We believe in commandments, but at our heart is once upon a time. Once upon a time, there was a little people that had no chance of surviving, but they believed and they persisted and they survived. That's our secret. That's our story. And it still isn't over. Shabbat Shalom.